Hello and welcome to the Film Pulse Podcast. This is episode number 505. My name is Adam Patterson. With me today we've got Kevin Rakestraw. Hey, Kevin.
Hello.
Hi. How's it going?
It's going all right. How's it going with you?
It's okay. I have a little bit of a cold that I'm trying to get over, but you know, nothing major. Yeah, just a little cold. This week on the show, we're going to be taking a look at Problemista, which is out now on VOD platforms. We're also going to be going over some of them watching on the watch list and this week's new releases in theaters, VOD and Blu-ray. Thank you so much for tuning in. I think we can just hop straight into our review. Again, we're talking about Problemista. This is written and directed and starring Julio Torres. I have a synopsis here. Alejandro is an aspiring toy designer from El Salvador, struggling to bring his unusual ideas to life in New York. As time runs out on his work visa, a job assisting an erratic art world outcast becomes his only hope to stay in the country. This also stars Tilda Swinton and RZA, which was kind of a surprise. I actually didn't realize RZA was in this.
I did not either.
And Isabella Rossellini is the narrator. So Julio Torres is he was a writer on SNL for quite a while, and he was also the creator of that show Los Spookies on HBO, which I haven't seen.
Oh man, it's so good.
I heard nothing but great things, but I haven't gotten around to watching that. Although, from what I've seen of Los Spookies, it kind of has the same vibe as this. Am I correct in that? Like the visual flourishes.
Yeah, to a certain extent, I could say that.
Okay, that was just kind of the vibe I was getting. Again, I haven't seen the show yet. Anyway, Kevin, we'll start with you. What were your initial impressions of Problemista?
I had relatively high hopes because I do like Julio Torres so much, and also just kind of desperate for a comedy that's, like, honestly just anywhere remotely good at this point. You know,
dude,
what I mean?
What is happening?
Bar is so low.
What is happening with comedies these days? I mean, like not only we're barely getting any, and the ones that we are getting are not funny. So, like, what is happening with comedies? I don't understand.
I don't know. I don't know, but it's a dire situation that we're in.
Yeah.
So, like, expectations in terms of, like, a full-length comedy film are relatively low, right? And it's only a little bit, the expectation only jumped up a little bit more with it being Julio Torres. She's like, if he can get me to, you know, chuckle, chortle, you know, maybe just smile a couple times over the course of an hour and a half, I'll count it as a huge success. And I think, for me personally, he delivered and more. And just, it's what you would expect from Julio Torres. And I think also, it's one of those things that we've talked about this with comedies throughout, you know, pretty much any time we do. With the narrative or the conflict or whatever, usually it's jokes are front loaded, and then it's like, okay, we have to get serious and get into the plot now, and the jokes kind of disappear, or they just, you know, they become less. But here, I thought it was pretty funny throughout.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I thought it really incorporated or intertwined like the heart of the film with the comedy itself.
Yeah.
And me, it just never really waned at any point, never dipped.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think that it does parse the comedy out at a very even keel. And even though it does tackle some, you know, serious and heartfelt issues, I think that it does it in such a way that it doesn't detract from the overall comedic vibe of the movie. Like, I think that it does a really great job striking that balance. Like, yes, it deals with some serious topics at times. However, it does it in an endlessly charming way. Like this, it's a very charming film that is always kind of light, despite some of the more kind of serious issues that it tackles with, like, immigration and all of that.
Yeah, I would agree 100%. It is. God, is it overwhelmingly charming?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was great. Like, I thought that it was funny. I didn't find it to be, like, hilarious or anything, but it was just one of those that I think probably most of the movie I had a smile on my face. It's just a very enjoyable, it's a very enjoyable kind of lighthearted film that, you know, you instantly form an attachment to Julio Torres's character in this. Alejandro, like, he's just such a kind of a innocent, pure soul, and you want him to succeed. And, you know, it's the amount of shit that he takes in this movie, like, it just gets worse and worse and worse for him, like, nonstop. But, you know, with a movie like this, I was kind of expecting it to have a happy ending, like, get better. So I was really hoping that it would be a little bit more conventional in that, because I wanted things to work out for him.
Yeah, 100%.
And I gotta say, like, I loved the way that it did end. Thought it was fantastic.
Yes, there's a lot to like here. I mean, for me, you know, watching a lot of Julio Torres's stuff, I feel like this is, like, what he presents himself here is, like, his most, I would say, like, broadest range personality wise. And so there's that, which is a huge positive. Tilda Swinton's ridiculous in this movie. I gotta admit, like, I haven't really liked her that much. Because a lot of her performances or her casting to me, like, over the past couple of years have been kind of, like, gimmicky. And, like, here was just, like, this ridiculous, over-the-top comedic character.
Mm-hmm.
It's like she got to have fun, and it was a joy to watch.
Yeah, I love Tilda Swinton, and she was so high strung in this. It just, just such an awful person.
I know, which is what I kind of loved, that in order for him to, like, evolve or, like, learn to, like, stick up for himself or whatever, is he learned it from, like, the absolute worst person. Just a terrible individual.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the personalities of these two people, they're exact opposites. And throughout the course of the movie, he learned, I think they learned from each other a good bit, where, you know, they're both on kind of extreme ends of this spectrum, and they both learned to sympathize with people, empathize with people, and also, you know, be a little bit more stern and stick up for yourself more.
Yeah. And I love his style of, like, really subtle, low-key absurdism.
Mm-hmm.
Just the fact that her flashlight was on her phone, like, all the time.
All the time. I loved that. I loved that. And I loved just all of, like, the technical stuff where she's just constantly having IT issues, which, you know, is
the very first time she calls the Apple support.
Just all of that stuff I found to be not only hilarious, but also, speaking from someone who works in IT, it's very on point.
And just, like, all of his ridiculous toy ideas.
I liked some of the toy ideas. I thought some of them were absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
But some of them were, but they were all fun. Yeah, like, they were all fun. The Barbie with her hand behind her back and the fingers crossed. I just loved that. Thought that was so funny.
Oh god.
And then, the car with the slowly deflating tire.
And I will say, I think the number one surprise is, like, this movie's really well shot.
Yeah, it looks really good. It almost reminds me of like Michel Gondry mixed with Wes Anderson or something.
Which, and then looking it up, and the cinematographer is the guy that works on all the Ruben Östlund movies, like Triangle of Sadness, The Square.
Okay.
He's literally done like all of his movies, and then Problemista.
Interesting. Well, those movies are really well shot too. So
yeah. They're
definitely different, though.
Oh yeah, but even like Problemista, there's that towards the end when they take the tram,
mm-hmm.
like the way that was shot, where it's just like following the
shadow,
Like it yeah, was just, like such a nice, peaceful, like little interlude,
and then she like freaks out on the guy. They make them turn the tram around. And the file maker pro thing just nonstop thinking file maker pro. I loved it. I thought it was so funny. So Rizza plays Tilda Swinton's husband in this, which is pretty funny. I didn't know that he was in this, and he plays kind of an interesting character. He's not in it a lot because the whole premise here is that he had terminal cancer and he had himself cryogenically frozen, but the cost is so prohibitively expensive that she needs to try to sell some of his paintings of eggs in order to pay for the cryogenics place.
Different egg paintings.
I liked some of them a lot. Some of them I thought looked kind of ridiculous.
Well, yeah. What are you going to get? Like, you can only paint an egg so many ways.
The one that they got from that Dahlia, Greta Lee's character. Mm-hmm. I think that was my favorite one.
Yeah, that was a good egg painting. Because yeah, when it's introduced, you're just, you know, they show the first one, the shy egg, and you're just like, wow.
Yeah, the shy egg was not very impressive. Thing.
And then you get to the Great Elite one, and you're like, oh, you can actually do, like, a really nice egg painting.
You knew. Yeah, yeah. I actually quite enjoyed the narration in this. Now, you know, narration is something that you and I both sort of rail against when it comes to most movies, but it was done so well in this. Isabella Rossellini was cast perfectly as the narrator, and it almost reminded me of like an Arrested Development type of narration, where she was just like cracking jokes and stuff, giving us like good insight. Like it felt like it had purpose, the narration, and I liked that quite a bit. I thought that she was really funny in it as well.
Yeah, I mean honestly, there's a lot to like. There's not a ton to dislike. I'm just, you know, if Julio Torres continues making movies, I'm definitely intrigued.
Yeah, I think that he definitely will. I think that there is, he's going to continue doing some really incredible things, I think. Because this was hitting all the right notes for me.
Mm-hmm. Sure was. And, you know, like we said.
Desperate for a comedy.
Please.
Pure desperation. All right, let's go ahead and give Problemista a score. Kevin, what are you going to give it out of 10?
I think I'm going to give it an 8.
8 out of 10, wow. Nice.
Yeah, I just like, it was like the right, it's just like the perfect level of like silly, absurd, heartfelt, you know what I mean? Just like a nice all-around balance.
Yeah, yeah. And at the end of the day, it's wildly entertaining, too. I mean, like, yeah, it just, every scene is just really well-crafted and enjoyable. I'm going to give it an 8 as well. I highly recommend this movie. It's a must watch of 2024, I would say.
Yeah. I'm just so happy that it didn't disappoint.
Yeah, you know? From the trailer, it looked good, but like, again, I don't have as much to go off of with Julio Torres as you do. So like, I was not really sure. Like, this was on both of our most anticipated lists, I think, two years ago,
I think. Yeah.
Or it was, I think it was for like 2023, maybe. And then it didn't, I don't know. It was on our lists like a while ago, but anyway. Yep, it didn't disappoint. All right, let's move on and talk about some of what we've been watching. Kevin, I believe it is your turn this week.
Oh, I'm going to hit you with The Rift from 1990. This is...
All right.
One, Pierre Simon, guy that did Pieces and Slugs. So this is kind of his... kind of like the Abyss ripoff. And another movie, forget, because the producer is the same guy. But anyways, it's an underwater thriller type. It's an experimental submarine. This guy, Jack Scalia.
I just read the tagline here. You can't hold your breath and scream at the same time.
Can't do it. You can't do it. You can try, but it's not going to work. So it's got Jack Scalia, Ray Wise is in here, and then R. Lee Ermey is also in here.
Hmm.
Yeah. So this guy, Scalia, he developed this experimental submarine, just like redefined submarines, right? So Siren 1 was the name of the first one, and it like disappeared. Something went horribly wrong. Government kind of blames it on him, even though they like made adjustments to his designs. So they make a Siren 2. He hops on that one to go find out, to essentially get the black box from Siren 1. Submarine goes down. Some sketchy stuff happening. Well, here they end up finding this like little like underground or like deep water lagoon type thing. And they get out, and which is funny because they don't have to hold your breath because it ends up taking place outside. Like it's under... It's deep, deep in a trench, like 37,000 feet down. But then it's like a lagoon and it's just open air. So they get out and it turns out there's a whole fucking laboratory down there, dude.
Whoa.
DNA accelerator, whole thing. Creating all sorts of weird fucking monsters. And the monster creature features. The creature effects are phenomenal. When they explode, like, holy shit. A lot of explosions, a lot of goo, just, you know, the viscera.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking going everywhere. It's a little bit dull at times, but man, the ending of this is just... Ooh. Man, it is something else to behold. Just a lot of goo, a lot of viscera. Just all over the place.
All right, cool. And that's The Rift. Lots of goo.
Lots of goo.
One that also has lots of goo is Late Night with the Devil. This is this dropped on Shudder this week. Directed by Cameron and Colin Carnes. This is the team that did 100 Bloody Acres from 2012. Wow. Which I liked quite a bit. I liked Late Night with the Devil more. This was great. This is really... solid horror film. Takes place in the 70s. So it's the premise here is that it's a unearthed tape of a live broadcast of this late night show that occurred on Halloween in 1977, and things go very, very awry in this taping. And so what it does is what we see as the viewer is it's like basically in real time. So we're seeing the show itself, and then during the commercial breaks, it cuts to a different camera, like a black and white camera that's almost shooting like a behind the scenes documentary type thing.
Okay.
Really well shot. It kind of captures that 1970s TV look quite well, like the costuming, the set design, all of that stuff, even the actual look of the film, like the cinematography looks pretty on point for the decade. I mean, I kind of wish it was shot on film maybe, or, you know, they could have done a little bit more, but, you know, it's good for what it is. Basically it's kind of like a possession film where they have this, this woman on who she's like a parapsychologist or something. And she has the brings on this subject of hers who was in this like devil cult. And this girl has a demon inside of her and is being, she's able to sort of control it. And then they decide to evoke this like demon on live TV, and just shit really hits the fan. It is wildly entertaining. It gets pretty like somewhat gory towards the end. I feel like it didn't quite stick the landing. I feel like the journey was a lot more enjoyable than the destination, but David Desmalchian stars in this, and he's fantastic. I like to see him in a starring role because I think that he's a really great character actor that has leading man potential. So yeah, I definitely recommend Late Night with the Devil. And the whole AI art thing, don't let that prevent you from watching this movie. Yes, they seem to have used AI art in this at least one time, that is for sure. I don't know if they use it more than once, but, you know, it is what it is. I think they probably didn't think that people would notice or think too much of it, but boy did they.
Mm-hmm. They sure did.
I don't know that I would have noticed it if I didn't already know that it existed. Like, I saw the still image of the skeleton with like the goofy hands, like the goofy AI hands and fingers. Like, I don't know that I would have noticed that because it's up for like 1 second in the movie.
But I think that's what I don't understand though. You know, for those little elements, it's like, let's have someone do it.
Yeah. The other thing is, like the skeleton one is only one of them, and there are a few different pieces that they use, and I don't know if the other ones are AI generated either. But I mean, they look good. They fit with the kind of motif of the movie. Now, I'm not sure if it's just the skeleton one or the other ones are AI generated as well.
Gotcha.
Either way, I still recommend the movie.
And it's gooey.
It's somewhat gooey. The next movie that I'm going to talk about is far more gooey. But
Well, I'm looking at, because I think I'm in a goo mood, you know, lately. Mm,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just the gooier, the better. Just enjoying.
You need to check out. Have you ever seen Street Trash?
No.
You should check out Street Trash if you're looking for goo.
Well, I'll hold on 1 second.
That's like 80s grime, like city grime.
Street Trash. 87 or 84? Oh, they're the same director. What? 80. Okay, that's the short film.
Yeah, the 80, probably the 87 one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've seen this. I haven't seen the movie, but I've seen that poster.
Gotta go ahead. Yeah, that's got some...
Oh, the banner image?
Great.
Right there is a shit ton of goo.
Yeah, crazy amounts of goo and Street Trash. That's a wild movie too.
Okay.
I think you'll have fun with Street Trash.
I look forward to it. Next movie I'm going to talk about had no goo whatsoever. and that's A Leap of Faith from 1992, directed by Richard Pierce.
It's like the exact opposite
of Goo.
It's a fun-loving Steve Martin comedy.
Steve Martin playing a fraudulent Christian, like, faith healer, revivalist type guy. Jonas Nightingale. This is on HBO Max. Or I guess just Max now.
Mm-hmm.
This is an interesting cast. You got Steve Martin in the lead role. Deborah Winger is like the main operator of the entire show. Like, she's like command central with all the cameras, all the information, feeding them his stuff so he can just wow these small town people. You got Liam Neeson is playing the sheriff of the small town. Meatloaf is a part of his entourage. His traveling crew. Philip Seymour Hoffman, also a part of his crew. And then Lucas Haas is one of the kids in this small town that has a bum leg from an accident. And he wants to get healed, obviously, after, because Steve Martin and his crew are kind of stuck in town for a while, and they keep putting on these revivals. And then, of course, he kind of likes the Lucas Haas kid. And, of course, at some point, he's going to want to get his leg healed. And Steve Martin's like, I don't know about this. But it's just interesting, Lucas Haas. Just the whole thing, like, it feels so much like Gemstones.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, you can tell that this this had to be a huge influence on that show, right?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, and then to have Lucas Haas in the last season.
Yeah, I totally forgot that Lucas Haas was in this movie.
Yeah, so it was all right. I enjoyed it enough while I was watching. It didn't blow me away or anything or have me laughing out loud, but it was entertaining enough. And it was just fun seeing all these people in early roles. Really,
I remember really liking this as a kid, but I haven't seen it in years.
Yeah, it's just a little one note because you know. Like, as soon as it's set up, you're like, well, I know exactly how this is going to play out.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And it does, but it's Steve Martin. Steve Martin is charismatic as hell.
Absolutely. And I don't know, there's just something comforting about 90s Steve Martin movies that I don't know, something
even,
about
even
them.
Even when they're not good, it's
yeah, just yeah. I would say even 80s Steve Martin movies. Like, I still, there's like The Jerk or Parenthood. I find a lot of comfort in them. And it's also funny because there's a lot of Steve Martin movies that I probably wouldn't traditionally like if it weren't for Steve Martin. Like, yeah. Father of the Bride, for instance. Like, I really love that movie. And I don't think there's any way that I would like that movie at all if it wasn't for Steve Martin.
Yeah, I think I'm going to end up watching a bunch of Steve Martin movies.
Hell yeah. A little Martin marathon.
The Martin marathon. Novocaine. You remember Novocaine?
I do remember Novocaine. Wow. That was an interesting one.
Sure was. What has David Atkins done since then? Nothing. Interesting.
Yeah. That's... I don't think it did very well.
No, probably not.
But, yeah. I don't know. So, I saw Immaculate. This is the other gooey one. This is directed by Michael Mohan. This is the guy that did The Voyeurs that came out in 2021, which I was not a big fan of that, but that was also starring Sydney Sweeney. In this, I'm sure that most of you are already familiar with this. This was a pretty big release a few weeks ago, or like a month ago or something, I don't know. She plays a nun who is, she ends up being accepted into this convent in Italy. And when she gets there, very quickly after taking her vows, they discover that she's pregnant, and she was not with any man. And it appears to be an immaculate conception. And she very quickly finds out that there's a lot more going on here. A lot, kind of some pretty horrific things happening here, as you might expect. So, you know, most people are probably thinking Rosemary's Baby, and there definitely is, you know, there's definitely some comparisons here. Like there's no way you couldn't compare this to Rosemary's Baby, but it is a different kind of movie. I liked it quite a bit. I thought that it gets bonkers. I did not really expect this movie to be quite as shocking as it is. I expected it to be salacious, maybe, like, I just because of the marketing and like just Sydney Sweeney's previous roles and stuff. I thought that it would be, there'd be like a lot of kind of sexual content in it. There's not really, but there is a lot of violence and it gets pretty gory. And that was very much a surprise. And it's really well done too. Like the makeup effects in this, the gore effects are very well done. And it's wild. It gets crazy. It's a movie that doesn't, it kind of knows exactly what it is. It's not trying to be overly earnest or anything like that. It's not goofy by any means, but there are like little things here and there, like little lines where it lets you know, like, okay, we're not taking ourselves too seriously with this movie. And it definitely also has a bit of a 70s kind of The Omen, Don't Look Now, like one of those, not Don't Look Now. Yeah, the Donald Sutherland one.
Mm-hmm.
That's
where he's in Venice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got like that kind of 70s gothic horror kind of vibe to it. It has a really great score too that kind of also evokes that era of horror, which I like a lot, and I find to be very creepy. And there is like some pretty creepy stuff in here in addition to the violence. I wouldn't say any of it is particularly scary, but you know, there's creepy nuns in it. This is certainly better than the movie The Nun. I didn't see the second one, but thought the first one was kind of dog shit. At any rate, I definitely recommend Immaculate. I was pleasantly surprised by it. It gets pretty wild at the end. So I do recommend it.
Check this out. Who knew?
Yeah, I think it's worth, I definitely think it's worth a look.
All right. That's good. Good. Glad to hear it. The only other thing that I forgot to mention, the other podcast, I finally saw Anatomy of a Fall.
Yeah.
You know, one that took the country by storm.
Yeah. Well, then one of the best movies of 2023.
Yeah, I gotta say, it's pretty good. Cinematically speaking, no, it's really boring and dull. But in terms of like the writing, the acting, all those aspects, thoroughly enjoyable. Just did nothing for me cinematically. But I will say, the way that it handled it, it's a narrative. Man, it was pretty thrilling, I gotta say.
Yeah, I
really liked, impressed with it.
Yeah, great performances. I was very intrigued by this movie. Cool. That's Anatomy of a Fall. Check that out if you haven't yet. The only other one I'll mention is The Tunnel. This is directed by Carlo Ledesma. Came out in 2011, and it's a found footage horror film about this news crew in New South Wales, where there's this historic drought, lots of water shortages, and it turns out that there are hundreds of kilometers of tunnels underneath the city, and in those tunnels is millions of liters of water. So the city has this like initiative where they're gonna pump all this water out and recycle it to replenish their water supply. But all of a sudden, like that just they just kind of ghost everyone. Like they just the plan, like the initiative just stops. Like there's no, they don't say why. They just like sweep it under the rug, pretend like it never happened. And this news crew is like, okay, well, something's going on here. So they start to dig and they find out that something's happening in these tunnels. So of course they go down into the tunnels and they find out that there's a really large homeless population that lives in the tunnels, but these people are starting to go missing. And there's something in the tunnels that's killing people. And guess what? It kills a bunch of people that are part of this news crew. They're fairly standard found footage stuff. Like there's some kind of like scary moments, but for the most part, it just follows all the standard found footage tropes. I noticed that a lot of people are into this one, but I mean, maybe if I saw it back in 2011, I would find it interesting, but I feel like this is just another run of the mill one that I think will just bleed into all the other found footage movies that I've seen over the years. Doesn't really stand out or anything. Apparently the making of this movie was pretty wild and they made a whole documentary about the making of this movie, but I didn't find it interesting enough to watch the making of, so I'll just, you know, take their word for it. So anyway, the tunnel is on Shudder now. If you want to check it out, it's also on Tubi.
Oh, Tubi. Tubi movie.
Yep.
The Rift also on Tubi, as one would imagine.
I'll mention one other one. And this is the Tubi reference reminded me of this. I saw a movie called Punk Rock from 1979 on Tubi.
Okay.
And as I was watching it, so I was in the mood for some New York grime. I was like, I'm in that mindset. So I was just doing a search, you know, on Tubi, and I stumbled onto this movie called Punk Rock from 1979, directed by Carter Stevens. And I'm watching it and I'm like, man, this movie is like so bad. It's just like absolute trash. And I wasn't getting the grime that I was looking for. This movie just felt like some kind of, it was just this like really boring detective story about this woman who gets kidnapped and this detective who's tracking her down. And everything felt really disjointed and I didn't know what was going on. And I'm like, yeah, the editing feels weird. So I look it up, and there's two listings for the same movie on Letterboxd. There's one from 1977, and there's one from 79. And looking into it a little bit deeper, I find that the original one from 77 is a hardcore porno. And the director, 2 years later, remade it to be like a regular movie, and he just removed the hardcore porn and replaced it with like filler, basically. From what I understand, on the Letterboxd reviews, it was like a lot of the scenes where the detective goes to different establishments and like interviews people, like that stuff was all added in replace of the sex scenes from the original one. So, and it was shot 2 years later. So all of the extra scenes were done with the same cast. He got the same cast back, but it was 2 years apart. So it doesn't quite match. And that explained why the version that I saw on Tubi looked so weird. But either way, I don't recommend seeking out Punk Rock. There's no punk rock to be had with it either, which is, you know, extremely disappointing.
Yeah. Did you at least get your New York grime?
No, it, I mean, it's kind of grimy, but like not what I was hoping or expecting.
No, that's a bummer.
Yeah.
That's a shame.
All right, let's take a look at what we have in theaters this week. We got Boy Kills World. This looks terrible. I'm sorry. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Nope, no interest.
We also have Challengers, the one with Zendaya.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That does not appeal to me. What else do we have? That's pretty much it. VOD this week, we got Monkey Man coming out. That was previously in theaters. Pretty quick turnaround on that one.
Yeah.
Justice League Crisis on Infinite Earths Part 2.
Quite the title.
Anyone But You is coming out on Netflix and VOD. That was in theaters previously as well. It's the rom-com. Downtown Owl. City Hunter is going to be on Netflix. I'm interested in that one. Breathe. We got Hack Your Health, The Secrets of Your Gut. That's coming out on Netflix. The Gut Health Doc.
Oh, there you go.
Everybody's all about gut health these days.
You got it, that gut biome.
Yeah.
Keep it in balance.
Keep that gut health going. I've got Cash Out. Got Cinderella's Revenge.
Okay.
Hip Hop in the White House. That's on Hulu. Bloodline Killer. The Moon in the Mask. Oh, sorry. The Moon and Back. MR9, Do or Die. Okay. La Cha-Cha. Altered Perceptions. The Doomsday Cult of Antares de la Luz. That's going to be on Netflix. And Pratfall. And on Blu-ray this week, we got The Departed coming out in 4K. We got Nostalgia from 1983. The Beekeeper. Rolling Thunder's coming out in 4K. That's a Shout Factory Selects title. The Cat and the Canary from 1927. Steel Magnolias getting 4K release. Goodbye, Uncle Tom. 1971 getting a 4K release. Black Mask from 1996. The Demoniacs from 1974. The Nude Vampire. Tormented from 1960. That Justice League one I mentioned earlier. Drive Away Dolls. Hutch from 1997. Household Saints from 1993. The Other Fellow from 2022, Cyrano from 2021, Deep Hatred, Another Day to Live Through, Tethered, The Score from 2021, Lone Wolf from 2021, Burstness from 2021, that's pretty much it. What about Criterions?
Got one, and that's I Am Cuba from 1964.
There you go. All right. I think that's going to do it for this week. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can send us your questions and topics to podcast@filmpulse.net. If you could, consider reviewing us on iTunes. That'd be great. For Kevin Rakestraw, my name's Adam Patterson, and we'll see you next week.